Welcome to Tax Breaks, a podcast by the Federation of Tax Administrators, where we have discussions with experts from government, academia, and the private sector. Today, we are taping Tax Breaks live at the 2024 FTA Technology Conference. Cue the audience. And we're going to have a great conversation with three leaders from the Wisconsin Department of Revenue about the recent CrowdStrike vulnerability and their agency's response. I'm FTA's Chief Operating Officer, Ryan Minnick, and I am joined by Brad Tomey, Amanda Mosel, and Rick Offenbecker from the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
I want to dive right into our conversation because I think this is a really special story. And I know, you know, Rick, when you and I first talked about this, we were wondering, you know, is there enough? It's a patch vulnerability. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you repatch once the vendor fixes the problem. But this had infrastructural ramifications all over the country. I mean, there are still private sector firms who are recovering from this CrowdStrike patch and not being prepared. You had major cloud vendors who had some issues with it. Those all, of course, recovered. They have huge technology teams. And what was really interesting is as I was watching my LinkedIn feed those couple of days, I saw a series of updates from your Department of Revenue that said, hey, this is down. We're working on it. Oh, by the way, this is back up. And it wasn't days, it was hours. So diving right in, I mean, this is a great example of a problem that you can't predict, you can't prepare for, other than normal training, response times, things like that. So Rick, I'll ask you first, as CIO, like, how did this unfold for you? I mean, tell me about your morning, because it was not a late afternoon. Vulnerabilities never hit late in the afternoon. It's always, you know, 3-4 in the morning when all breaks loose.
Yeah, it did start very early in the morning. Our head of our infrastructure that manages all of our servers and databases and everything, he was on the phone at 2 a.m. already with our centralized IT organization, being notified that there was servers down. He had started emailing me, and by probably 5:30, 5:45, I was on the phone with Secretary Casey saying, hey, we got a problem. And he had already seen it on the news at that point and was wondering if we were impacted by this. So that's kind of how things started to unfold. I started watching it in the news and trying to figure out exactly, you know, what the impact to us was. It was quickly found out that we had about 126 servers that had gone down and need to be updated or, in some cases, just rebooted. Enterprise-wide, throughout our entire organization, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 750 servers that were impacted. So that's kind of the way the day started. It was unclear at that time exactly how many employees were impacted and exactly which systems were down. We did know our internet system was down, so our website was down, our tax system was down, and those had certainly impacts throughout the organization.
Well, and I find that, you know, you all right out of the gate had notices out to the public. I know we'll talk about the communication strategy in a little bit, but that's, I mean, exercising transparency, right? You know there's a problem. No matter what the issue is, you get that information out there saying, hey, we're aware there's a problem. Now let's figure out what the solution is. So that gets into kind of this response plan. And I know, you know, Rick, I'll let you kind of introduce Brad's role into this, because you find out it's happened. You immediately get things into motion. You're talking to State Central. You're talking to the, you know, secretary of the agency. You're coming up with your, you know, implementing your disaster response plan or your communications part of that. Then you pick up the phone or Teams and you ping Brad. So how do you put things in motion, or how did you get things in motion in order to begin the triaging within the agency?
Yeah, so I started, once I had communicated with the secretary about what was going on in our organization and my counterparts at other agencies, we all had a big, giant Teams chat going on, trying to kind of figure out exactly what the impact and what was going on. At that point, I did reach out to Brad. It took a couple of times because it was kind of early in the morning to get through to Brad, but once I got a hold of him, basically I just kind of filled him in on what was going on and what had happened and so forth, and you know, he immediately jumped into action. You know, he oversees our entire customer service area within IT, which includes all of our workstations and servers and, you know, the service desk and so forth. So this was definitely the biggest impact was in his work area.
Brad, I am also a not morning person, so it would take Rick a couple calls to get me as well. So you're not alone in that regard.
That happened to me. So it's not every day that you get two calls from your boss before you get up in the morning. So it was pretty interesting. I got up and I didn't have as much coffee as Rick at that point, so I had to get up to speed. But his mind was racing at like 100 miles an hour and telling me, you know, this is a catastrophe and we need to get moving on it. So we did a good job of that. You know, we called an emergency meeting with our managers at 8 o'clock. And at that point, I was sort of preparing myself for the day and, you know, telling my family, like, this is going to be a long day. We don't know when we're going to be. I'm not going to know when I'm going to come home, potentially. I think the story ended up much better than that, but in the end. But, yeah, we basically, I was, like, on the phone with all the staff that were working remotely and having them come in, and we were trying to assess the situation. So
that's actually really interesting. So I know this is a kind of a key element of the story, which is that your team is hybrid. Some people more remote than others. I don't know what your exact number of days in office are, but this obviously is an all hands event. And one of the chief kind of criticisms that people who are anti hybrid work or anti remote work will say is that, well, if we have an all hands event, we all got to be there. But I don't think that necessarily presented a problem for you. So you get off the phone with Rick, you start working with the team. At one point, make the request, everybody comes in to join the fray. How did that go? Was there any issues with that shift from people who were scheduled to be hybrid that day back into the office?
And we sort of talked about this earlier today. And, you know, we have a really good team, and I think people realized that once it was on the news that we needed their help, and there was no hesitation. I think we had people come in and help. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, we called in a number of people, and I don't think a single one of them grumbled. I think, you know, had we called them and said, oh, so-and-so didn't show up for work, I needed to come in and take their spot, that's a little bit different than turning on the news and seeing a global IT outage. So they all knew what their role was and that they needed to come in, and they came in with a very, very positive attitude.
Yeah, and I think part of that too speaks to how we communicated and you know, kind of set up our telecommuting plan too with our employees. It was always an expectation of, if we need you to come in, you know, we will call you and ask you to come in. And I think that the fact that we communicated that often with them, and again, like Rick said, it was more of a, we're all in this together. They saw the news and they knew right away that, hey, if I need to come in, I already know that that's an expectation too. And they were willing to, and no grumbling on my team either.
That's a great thing to hear, because I think, you know, something else is, as you were talking, Amanda, that popped into my mind is, I mean, this feels a lot like, you know, inverse COVID, right? Everybody had to leave the office rapidly. This is a completely opposite situation. Everybody had to come into the office rapidly. Do you think that kind of sense of response or that sense of community from COVID is kind of persisted with your agency, so that when something like this happened, you know, would this have been a different response maybe in 2018 or 2019 versus today in 2024?
Yeah, I think that definitely brought us all together and showed that when something like this does happen, people come together. I think you're right that it could have been a very different response have we not kind of been through this before, but in reverse. So yeah, really the kind of culture and community and collaboration that we build at our agency had a huge impact.
I think that is a testament to culture. And culture, of course, is inside the agency and outside the agency. Of course, today, anybody watching the podcast will see I've got my FTA kindness pin on. If you're listening, I'll describe it to you. It's a little heart made up of the small elements of the FTA logo. Last year for World Kindness Day, we took, and of course, our executive director, Sharon Bernardi, when she arrived at FTA, set FTA's culture as a culture of kindness. And what that means broadly for us is that we, not only as a team, treat each other with kindness, which I think is obviously very critical, but this is representative of the kindness that everyone in this room, with us all 400 plus people watching us now, they show that kindness to their teams and to the taxpayers, and that kindness is expressed in a number of ways. It's transparency, it's communication, it's sense of community coming together. So when it comes to, and actually I'll ask you this, you know, kind of start with you, Amanda, when there was this impact, you know, we've talked about the technical side, that happened very early in the morning. I'm sure at some point your phone rang, and then you have this kind of responsibility across the agency of communicating not only with non-technical, non-IT staff, but also getting a message out to the taxpayers. So how did that go? What's your version of this story? I feel like I'm telling a story in many parts.
Yeah.
I'm riveted.
Sure. So I first heard that something had happened from my husband saying, oh no, And I said, oh no, what? And then he read the headline to me, and I was like, I better get up and see if I can log in and start trying to get a hold of some people. And thankfully, I was one who was able to get in. And in less than 10 minutes after I logged in, Rick was calling me and said, hey, have you heard of this issue? Yep, that's why I'm in an hour and a half early into my computer, and knew I had to start to get ready to come in. And from there, I called the supervisor who actually gets to the office earliest in my area, knowing that she could help kind of direct traffic, help people understand what was going on for all the people that were in the office. And then it turned to external communication. So I did send out an email, an internal email, knowing that it wasn't going to reach everyone, right? And a Teams message to say, this is going on. Please don't call the service desk because they know about it. They're working on it. And then from that email, our comms team, so I have one of the members of our comms team on kind of my distribution list, and he replied right away and said, do you need me to put a rotator up on our website? And I said, well, you can't because the website's down too. And then our comms team was on it right away and got the information out to LinkedIn to say our phones are down. And we just stayed in constant communication. And I think that really speaks to our culture too. You know, we've done a great job of building relationships across the agency to the point where, you know, Rick did call me within 10 minutes and I answered. You know, if we didn't already have this relationship built, if I saw Rick calling me, I might be like, ooh, I don't think that's a call I want to take. You know, what's going on here, right? That we had built, we already have this positive working relationship and that allowed us to react quickly. And as far as the external communications, we had to get creative, right? We couldn't do our normal, just put a rotator up on the website and people know we're down. I do think, too, that with all the media coverage, our taxpayers knew what was happening, and so they were understanding and patient as well, which isn't always the case with, you know, when things like this happen, but knowing it was a global event, people were patient and understanding when they did finally get through to us.
No, I think that's actually quite amazing how many areas of the agency this touched, you know, and now I'm kind of watching this might date me a little bit, but the peak fury around the show 24, right? I feel like we need a clock below us ticking. Like, we're only a couple hours into the day at this point. You know, all three of you have started way earlier than you expect. And, you know, Amanda, you caused, like, a visceral reaction to me when you mentioned, I didn't know if I could log into my laptop. I can only imagine, as a technology person, pulling my laptop up to deal with an incident and potentially not being able to get in. Glad you were able to get in. I don't know if I could have handled that turn in the story. But Brad, at this point now, you're starting to get your service desk aligned around, okay, here's how we're going to, you know, maybe triage this. We maybe now have a grasp of what to do. So how were you preparing for what was certainly going to be a very long day of troubleshooting and working on individual workstations?
Yeah, we were preparing the best we could. You know, I got into the work day, and there's a huge line at the service desk of people who are broken. And it was kind of interesting. At that point, we had people actually fixing the problem. So one person had discovered that the fix and was actually fixing it. And so my approach was, as people were coming in to the office, I was having them kind of shadow other people in the service desk so they could learn how to fix it. And I thought that was a good approach to be able to just have people learn as quickly as possible because there was a huge line of people. I also had our division administrator for enterprise services standing at my door and our deputy administrator for IS&E wondering how they could help. And they were actually really helpful and instrumental in helping prioritize who was going to get fixed when. At that point, our servers were up and running pretty much when the business day started, but we weren't at full capacity. So we prioritized Amanda's the customer service bureau because we wanted to be able to start taking phone calls. And so that's where we kind of, as the staff learned what to do, the service desk, we had them go in the customer service bureau and fix it. And actually, unfortunately, I had to tell people, like, you know, no, we're not gonna be able to fix you right now because we had to fix and get the phones up and running first. So that's sort of how we prioritized it. And it went well, and at some point, we sent out all staff communication that you know, this was down, and that we invited people to come down to our events room at 10:30 to get started with an in-person fix, and that was something that we were preparing for at that point.
Awesome. So you identify the, you know, key priority workstations to restore. You create the Wisconsin Department of Revenue Genius Bar in the events room. Rick, what was the total number, what was the scope of impact on the workstation side for the agency?
I think all in all, we ended up with about 300 workstations and laptops that were impacted. You know, and concurrent to what Brad just described, while he was coordinating getting this Genius Bar set up down in our events room, as well as you know, having the workstation staff prioritizing some of Amanda's laptops and staff, our infrastructure people were also working on trying to get the servers up, right? So if it wouldn't be any good to Amanda to have her staff on the phones with their laptops up with no tax system to hook up to. So we were really had to prioritize getting our tax system up. Last I had heard, we were probably the second in the nation for our particular vendor to actually have their tax system back up and running. And a lot of that had to do with our relationship that we have with our centralized IT organization. We, like I mentioned earlier, we had 126 servers that were impacted just for our organization. And because of the relationship that we have with our centralized IT organization, they gave us the ability to do the fixes ourselves. So we didn't have to wait for them to prioritize us. We were able to jump in and kind of move with that. So some of this stuff, we had multiple things happening simultaneously in order to have this all come together.
Absolutely. Well, and because of course, the good work being done with the customer service team, you didn't have, you know, taxpayers calling you once the phones were working saying, just reboot it. When my TV doesn't work, I just unplug it and plug it back in, and that seems to solve the problem. I don't understand why we're still down. I need to file my taxes. So that's you have all these concurrent streams happening. So you've got, you know, 300 stations, which is, you know, size and scale, every agency is a little different. That's no small task, because we've all watched a Windows update bar before with bated breath. So you're looking at 300 workstations. You have to prioritize that workflow. You've now gotten your customer service back up and running. So, you know, we have phones working. We have people calling in. So, Amanda, what was that like, the first wave of taxpayers who were calling in? Because I'm guessing these may be people who didn't see the news or who did and were a little panicked about X, Y, or Z.
Sure. So I will say our call center was up and running. We were taking calls within about an hour of opening. So our call center opens normally at 7:45. We were taking calls at 8:50. So I think that in itself prevented that, you know, onslaught of calls right away, because that first hour of the day at this time of year, we're not super, super busy anyway. And so the fact they got us up and running so fast, we did not see the barrage of calls. We did have some people that called in and didn't expect to actually get through when they called and were impressed that we were up and running. I was extremely impressed we were up that fast. But yeah, it was not, there was, I didn't hear any negative feedback from customers. Like I said, I think because they knew it was a worldwide event, and some of the people who didn't see the news, you know, didn't really know any different. Our hold time was not impacted that day either. So by the time, you know, we opened, we had everyone on the phones and ready to go. So we were, it was just kind of business as usual by 8:50 in the morning on that day, which was impressive, extremely impressive to me. When I first kind of heard that, oh no, from my husband, I thought, ooh, we're going to be down half the day. People are going to be mad. And that was not the experience at all.
I think that's a super good point, because we didn't really have a negative impact. We had a positive impact.
Absolutely.
Right? We were up so fast that our taxpayers didn't even know that we were down, I think, for the most part, other than we told them so on LinkedIn. But other than that, you know, they just, from a call center standpoint, they had no idea.
Right.
That's just incredible. I mean, I'm just imagining, you know, clock starts ticking 2-3 in the morning. We're all the way through now. We're just a little bit past the start of the business day. And, you know, your average taxpayer who didn't turn on the news, hadn't opened, you know, their iPhone or Android phone to see the news alert about CrowdStrike, or they saw it and they thought it was some sort of weird bowling league. Now they're getting their calls answered, and you're in your tax system, and you're just doing your day-to-day work. Okay. While also in the background, you know, Brad, your team's, you know, working on this mitigation. I think, Rick, you know, you kind of led me to the next question, which is, from a leadership perspective at the agency level, yourself, the secretary, the other top leadership, what were some things that were kind of in place before? What were kind of some of those leadership strategies that led to this incredible outcome? Because we have to come back and visit with Brad in a minute to find out where we are, you know, late morning. But for now, like reflecting, you know, what were some other key ingredients? I know Amanda was talking about culture, COVID response, those kind of wonderful positive things. But I mean, training plays a key role. Obviously, you know, you as a CIO, having those relationships with staff all over the agency, that way they pick up the phone as opposed to being a scary call from your CIO.
You covered a lot of it. It's not just one thing that made this all come together. It's a whole bunch of things kind of coming together, right? It's our culture, and as Amanda alluded to a couple of times, our culture at DOR is very good. I mean, we've been focusing on employee engagement for a number of years now, almost 10, I think more than 10, and we do surveys every year, and we do concentrate on making those results better. And I think those results have a big impact across the organization on how we interact and people's dedication to making DOR better, right? There's one of the questions we ask people is you know, whether or not they are committed to the success of the department. It was quite obvious when this event happened, they were committed to the success of this department. They came in, they started working on this stuff. Staff that were out at home on their telecommuting days that had broken laptops, a lot of people drove in and got in line and put their name on the list to get their workstations fixed. So culture is a big piece of it. Our leadership, you know, and I know that folks that are on the podcast listening to us today can't see this, but my leadership is sitting in the front row here, and I think they were very supportive of this entire endeavor. You know, we called in after I talked to Secretary Casey at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. We decided we needed to have an emergency leadership team meeting. We pulled everybody together, and I went into the room and I kind of briefed everybody on what was going on. And like good leaders do, they just said, all right, they kind of knew that we had this all taken care of and asked how they could assist. And that went very, very smoothly. One of the leaders even said, Rick, you're very calm. I don't know how you're so calm with all this stuff going on. And I think that's just part of the support we got from our leadership team. And then all the other little things that you would expect, right? Having standards and procedures and all that stuff in place and good trained staff that are capable of doing their jobs and are allowed to do their jobs without a whole lot of hand-holding and supervision and micromanaging and so forth. So it's just a whole bunch of things that I think just come together that really shined on that particular day.
I mean, you listed off kind of a really great kind of greatest hits list of a lot of different things at FTA we've talked about over the years with different agencies all over the country. And there's agencies that do a number of these things really, really well. I mean, obviously, everyone focuses on different things at different times. It warms my heart to hear employee engagement, because that's often seen in the technology sector as a squishy thing. You know, it's not necessarily perfectly quantifiable. It's not necessarily perfectly, you know, translatable to ROI. But I mean, this, for anyone listening, and hopefully those of who are here with us live in the audience, I mean, this is, I think, a direct correlation of ROI to employee engagement and the value of investing in that culture. Because, I mean, you know, Brad, I'll come back to you. Your team came together, you had did some live training so that people could, you know, remediate the issue over and over. How did that, you know, your service desk team culture play into this? Because, you know, chaos, right? 300 workstations, hundreds of people in and out of your events room. It's not your normal triage space. You're relying on, you know, also getting updates at the same time about what else is happening infrastructure-wise at the agency. That requires a certain amount of flow and a certain amount of team communication that doesn't get forged in the moment. That's built over time.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because if you the way that Rick and I handled this, like, we were calm, and I think that portrays to the rest of the staff. They felt assured that everything was going to be okay. You know, if the leadership is kind of freaking out about the moment, then that really goes into the staff. So we try to be calm, and we try to handle a lot of the chaos and coordination. I was just more focused on getting the team to understand how to fix it and help as many people as possible as quickly as we can. And, you know, 10:30 rolls around and we're in our events room in our Genius Bar helping people out. We didn't know how many people were going to show up. Over 100 people showed up. And we were like, oh, we need to triage these folks. And so we were just like came up with made a list on the fly of people and had them wait in line. And eventually the list grew too big. And we're like, okay, we need to make sure we can't just have people wait in line for 2 hours while we fix their stuff. So we had them write down their phone numbers, and then they could go back upstairs and do other work. And we found out later, we were kind of talking with our tax operations area, they had some computers that were working. So staff were actually able to go up, use different computers. There were some other things some creative things that they were doing while their computers were getting fixed. And that was kind of neat to see and hear about. But all in all, we started off with only 4 people in our events, in our Genius Bar. And we had, you know, we ended up serving over 178 people. At the end of the session, we had over 20 people helping. So we went from 4 to 20 over that course of period of time, and we ended up having everybody fixed by noon.
Were all 20 of those folks members of your team, or were all were some of them volunteers coming in from your State Central as well?
So it was a combination of our workstation and service desk support. Mm-hmm. We also had some folks on our application environment support, the folks that are doing the servers. At that point, the servers were up and running. Everything was normal. And they had been fixing servers all morning. And so they knew how to fix it. And so they came in and helped to fix it. And there was even a few staff that were not familiar with it that had learned and fixed it well. We also have our lottery division, and they have some IT staff. So actually, it asked them to come in and help, and they did a good job of learning quickly and helping. So that's how we kind of built up that team of 20.
Awesome. So now those people that work on servers and applications, are they normally cross-trained on help desk, or is that something they don't usually work with the end users?
It is something that they don't normally work with the end users.
And I only say that because if you've ever met someone who works in servers and applications, they're delightful people, but end user customer support is not necessarily the ideal outcome of their day. They like servers for a reason.
I think we did pretty good, though.
That's really impressive. I mean, you had a group of 20, and you got the server guys out of the back. That's how you know there's a major issue, or really good coffee, one or the other. I mean,
And they were all willing to help. They just jumped right in, and then one of our leads of our workstation area created up a nice little set of generic instructions, because he put them together pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That was real easy for anybody that wanted to help out to kind of go through. Obviously, you needed to have the permissions to be able to do some of this stuff, so we couldn't just grab anybody. Like one of Amanda's customer service people wouldn't have had the authorities to do what needed to be done. But it went super, super well.
Yeah, but you talk about culture. I mean, my team is dedicated. They were there. They were not complaining. We were getting things done as quickly as possible. Nobody deviated from any other thing that they were doing for that day except for fixing that problem. And that's, I think, what made us solve it quickly. And we could shift, and into the next phase of what this was.
One of the interesting things I think about, Brad mentioned that we had ended up with like 20 people down there text working on this, trying to solve this and get these people fixed. They were doing it three different ways. We didn't have one particular way. A couple of different folks figured out different ways to fix the problem, and they were all doing it differently. Whereas I know, I mentioned earlier, my counterparts and I had a chat going on across multiple agencies about what was going on throughout the day, and one of the things that came out of that was there was some folks that were other agencies, I'll remain unnamed, but they actually were working on trying to perfect their documentation. And sometime about noon or so, one of them posted a document saying, all right, we got it all figured out. If anybody wants to use this, we're going to start working on workstations. And by that time, we had been doing it three different ways and just triaging the patient, so to speak, and making sure that everybody was okay and not worrying about some of the details and making sure everybody's doing it a single uniform way. That wasn't important. What was important was getting Amanda's staff and other people up to speed as quick as we could.
And I think that that's a true testament to our culture, right? We trust our staff to do their work. The way they get there doesn't always matter, right? They had the same end result. They were able to fix it. And Brad and Rick trusted their staff to do that. They didn't say, you have to do it this way. They said, let's figure out how to fix it together. We're a team. We're going to figure out how to fix it. They did it three different ways, and they all worked. And like I said, I think that's a true testament to our culture. And, there is trust going both ways. We've done a lot of work building that trust between, managers and supervisors and employees. And I think that this was a great example of why that's important, right? If as an employee, if I didn't trust Brad or didn't know that Brad trusted me, I wouldn't try to innovate like that. I wouldn't try to find the solution. I would say, tell me what to do, right? And that isn't what happened. So
I think that's a great point. I mean, agility and resilience, right? Two marks of a high, very high functioning team. Trust, of course, comes into it. I like your point about trust, because I don't, and maybe I'm reading between the lines, but it didn't sound like it was explicitly trust that you had with Brad, right? It was trust that you had with your colleague in the agency. That is a much harder form of trust to build, right? You're trusting every one of your colleagues, regardless of your depth of personal relationship with them, versus, oh, I trust Rick, I work with him all the time, I know him, he's a good person, so I can. That's organizational trust. That's huge.
Absolutely, it is, and you're exactly right. It's trust in the organization, in leadership, and not just, I know Rick and I know Brad, so I trust them, but it's trust in your leaders that they're going to let you do your work in the way that makes sense, not the way that they tell you you have to do it. So.
And Rick, the people will see it on the recording. They won't hear it on the audio. My eyes almost popped out when you told me about, you know, it's like organizing deck chairs in the Titanic. You know, it doesn't matter how perfect your documentation is, you got to get the workstations fixed. So testament to yours and Brad's leadership for saying, hey, you know what, let's figure out how to get it done. And then, you know what, we can document as we go or as we have time to free somebody up. And maybe if this pops up later on in the day or tomorrow or whatever, people will have the documentation. But odds are CrowdStrike, hopefully, I think they've, you know, the only thing that kind of made me entertained is they sent out did you get one of the DoorDash or the Uber Eats or whatever gift cards they were sending out to their customers? Or was that just your State Central hoard those?
We must be in the mail.
We didn't get that yet.
That was like one of my most important questions I had like circled on my notepad was, did they get the DoorDash gift card and could you accept it? It was less than $25. I think it was okay. So let's kind of shift into some advice, right? So people listen to this podcast to be mildly entertained about tax administration, if that's even possible. And instead, you know, what we like to do is give them a few takeaways, right? So from each of your perspectives, three very unique perspectives, and I'll say, first of all, this is incredible. You don't really refer to vulnerabilities and patches as riveting ever. I think I've used the word twice now in our conversation. Because this is more than just a kind of boring, okay, some major tech company messed up a patch and it had a ramification and it brought some things down and, you know, months from now we'll all kind of forget that it happened. This was kind of a really great live, I'll call it a live team building event. We'll spin it positively here. So I'm going to ask each of you from your perspective what advice you'd give to your peers across the country. So, Rick, we'll start with you. So your fellow CIOs leading the technology group in their agency, or maybe those who interface with their State Central folks, since most agencies have that relationship, and what advice would you give to your peers?
I think I have two different pieces to share. One is to fix your leaky roofs on a sunny day, right? So that means building your relationships. You can't do all this as the events happen, and you have to have some of this in place before. I mentioned that our centralized IT organization allowed us to jump in and start fixing servers. That's because we had a great relationship with them that's been built up over the years. Those are things that you need to work on. Same with our culture and having your standards and everything else put in place. Good training, a good management team, good fellow, you know, colleagues that are in the organization. That all takes time, right? So I like to put it as just, yeah, fix your leaky roofs before it starts raining. And the other piece is to focus on what you can control and not what you can't. You know, it's real easy when an event like this is going on to kind of start to wallow in, oh, I can't believe this is happening to me. Why is this happening? That doesn't help anything, right? You just need to kind of jump in, as Brad had mentioned, and show that we have a calmness and we have this and we know what we're doing and can kind of solve this issue. So I think it's focusing on what you can control, and that's generally your attitude about the situation and how you're going to react to it, right? I can't change the situation, but I can change how we're going to and have a good attitude about getting it fixed, and I think we all did that.
That's fantastic. Amanda, for your colleagues.
Yeah, and I would say along similar lines to what Rick was saying, it's extremely important to build and keep positive relationships with your IT team. So obviously I'm coming from the business side of it. You know, we could easily have devolved into, oh my gosh, where is Brad's team? Why haven't they fixed it yet? You know, but that didn't happen because we've built that strong positive relationship. And you know, Brad and Rick's teams, they do a great job of kind of getting out there too. So they do something called tech talks at our agency too, and their teams participate. And so when you call the service desk, you don't picture, you know, the IT crowd in the basement saying, try turning it on or turning it off and turning it back on again, right? They're people, and we know them, and we know their faces, and we're comfortable talking to them. And I think that calmness, too, just was so important. You know, when Brad's team came up to my floor, to the call center, and started working on people's machines, everybody was calm and happy and, you know, joking around as they were going through it. So I think the biggest advice I have is just to maintain those strong, positive working relationships across work areas with your IT team, because it just makes things like this go so smoothly.
Thank you. I like that, Amanda. And I echo both Rick and your comments. Like, relationships are huge. And one thing that we did a lessons learned after this, and it was interesting to hear from the staff how they thought it could go better. And one of them came up with a good idea of like having more of these kind of scenarios play out where we could actually have some practice. So at our agency, we have this continuation of operation, COOP plan, yep. operations plan, and we practice once a year. Well, maybe we could do that more often and have it be more fun and engage the more staff to be able to help and come up with creative ways. Because we did have to be creative in how we reacted to this, and I think we could do that more.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, the idea of having, you know, the proverbial one arm tied behind your back in order to have to execute X, Y, or Z during one of those scenarios. It's really interesting that all three of you come back to relationships, which, not surprisingly, I'm a big fan of. I mean, we're sitting on a stage at a conference designed for people who are in technology and the business side of agencies to get together and build relationships. That's what makes all of this work. That's what makes government work in general, right? If we didn't have a relationship with the taxpayer, we probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing. It's a public service. That's why they call it that. So I really like your point about how do you move forward from this? What's your advice for your colleagues, but also what are some actions you're taking? I love the idea of doing more COOP strategic exercises. Also, it sounds like you all nailed appointment setting. I mean, you were getting back to people by phone number. That's better than any experience I've had at a certain tech company's service desk over the years for my certain phone that shall not be labeled so that we don't have to take our podcast off of their network.
I think that's one of our lessons learned as well, was the phone numbers, because next time we need to go digital, we had people handwriting their names and phone numbers, and as you know, people's handwriting isn't always great, so some of the numbers had a hard time getting back to people. Luckily, they came back down and said, hey, I'm still broke, and we were able to get them sorted out. But
yeah, we should probably do an iPad or something next time for a check-in system.
Awesome. So what other changes were you thinking, or have you all made or are planning to make posts? So you talked about some COOP exercises, obviously continuing the really good, I mean, the tech talks sound fantastic. We should talk about those at some point in the future, because I think a lot of agencies are starting to do that kind of engaging content where it's one area the agency sharing with others. Technology seems like an appropriate place to start. What else? Is there anything you've changed in the wake of this as we're a few weeks out from it now? Is there anything that's on your minds that you've been thinking about going in?
I think we're working with our security officer, just trying to make sure that, and I don't know that we could have avoided it in this particular case, but kind of looking at our supply chain, how we get patches from different vendors, how long we hang on to those before we deploy them, and that sort of thing. We're certainly evaluating that. But that has to be balanced with security, right? We don't want to wait too long to put patches on, hoping that a disaster like this doesn't happen, because we want to make sure we have always got the latest and greatest on and that we are protecting the information that we're privileged to take care of. So,
yep. One of my favorite takes on this from discussions I had right after the vulnerability came out and talking with a few people in the tech sector, it was their layman's explanation of what happened at scale was, when you go to Home Depot and you pick out the perfect color for your dining room, and then you go home and you paint just one little spot of your dining room wall to make sure the light hits it, so that way it's the color you think it is. No one did that. They just painted the dining room. And that's actually quite accurate. I mean, you have this intersection, like you said, it's risk, right? So it's a highly trusted vendor, so you're going to patch, because the risk of not patching when a major vendor puts something out really is risk of exposure. So you're always going to be balancing this, and that's why I love that you all were able to sit down and have this conversation with me today, because this is the class, I said at the beginning, I'll say it at the end, this is the classic example of no matter how well you prepare, you really are going to end up being tested by that preparation, because you can't avoid it. A perfectly secure system is one that's inaccessible, and a perfectly flexible system is one that's highly insecure. So you've got to balance all of those things. And I'll tell you, hearing this today, this journey that you all took, I have a feeling that we're doing this middle of the conference. I have a feeling that all three of you are going to have a hard time, a really hard time finding a place to sit at lunch, because no one's going to want to hear more about this. And yeah, this is just what a great story. Any final thoughts from you all? I mean, is there anything that you all are working on now that you want to share with the audience? We always give our podcast guests an opportunity to to plug something, or whether it's a sharing that you're doing, or any if you're a musician, I don't know, Brad, is it drums, guitar?
Nope, not a musician.
And no one wants to hear my singing voice.
Yeah. but I will say that, you know, something that we're really proud of that went well was the communication. You know, externally, we didn't really talk about the internal communication, but I think that went well, having a lot of practice in communicating with folks internally for other IT issues. So that's gone well, and I think we're just constantly looking at ways to improve that. So we're using, you know, multiple different tools, multiple different mechanisms to get a hold of people, like, and we want to continue to build upon that.
Awesome.
I can just jump on a little bit with what Brad just said. The communications thing is super important, and that is one thing we'll probably go back and take a look at. You know, during the event, you know, we couldn't email, we couldn't Teams a majority, you know, a portion of the employees, but we did do a lot of foot traffic running around the agency by foot to communicate, as well as getting on the PA system. You know, we have a PA system in our building, and we actually jumped on that and said, "Hey, if you're having troubles with your computer, come down to the events room and get yourself fixed." So.
That's fantastic. All good tips. Amanda, any last thoughts?
I think the one thing that I still want to explore a little bit is more creative ways for external communication when things like this happen too. Like I said, normally we put a rotator on our website and couldn't do that this time. And luckily our comms team was creative and jumped in and went, okay, we're going to post it on LinkedIn, but what else can we do? And so that's something that I want to explore a little more if something like this were to happen again.
No, it makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, like I said, I, you know, not being a Wisconsinian, saw it on my LinkedIn feed that morning as I was scrolling through the news and keeping track of what was going on. So obviously you're reaching people out there, and your reach is far more broad than just within your state. And you know, that creative communications, it's still wild that there's a PA system in your building. Sorry, Rick, you completely distracted me. And the fact that someone knew how to activate it, that's the other thing that was really impressive, and that it wasn't tied to a server that was also down. Like this, those three things really came together. And with that, we'll turn to, we got 8 minutes left, so if there's questions in the audience, we can take them.
So I really liked a lot of what you were saying about the culture you've created, and I know that all of you are in like more managerial positions. What sort of things do the people that you manage contribute to your culture? So just from a more lateral, I guess.
Sure, so I'll take that one. So we have, I mean, a number of teams and ways for staff to get involved at the agency, from our staff relations advisory committee to our some of our employee resource groups. And I think that really helps create collaboration across, you know, that lateral collaboration across work units. And when I mentioned before about like the tech talks, that's just one example of the ways that we, you know, have people come out and talk about what they do and the things that they know. We also have a program called Good Morning DOR, where you know, someone will interview an individual, and it can be, you know, one of my call center agents was just on it last week, and it's a great way to get to know each other as people, not just as this is the work I do, but here's who I am, and here's some of the interesting things about me, and that has really helped our culture. And in addition to that, we've really focused in the last couple of years on training our management and supervisors on how to build effective relationships and make sure that you are seeing your employees as people, not just, I have these goals for my work unit that need to get done. I have people on my team, and they have a, you know, the largest contribution to whether we succeed or not is how I treat them as people. And like I said, we've done a great job building that with our managers and our staff, and giving them all ways to get involved, and encouraging them to get involved, and giving them that time to get involved.
That's an amazing response. I like it. The only thing I would add to that would be that we give all of our employees, like we went through a strategic planning effort, and we let every employee that wanted to be part of that be involved. We brought them all together in rooms, and we listened to their opinions and thoughts on how to make the agency better. And I think that goes a long way. That's how they can kind of contribute on a regular basis, is through things like that.
Awesome. Anyone else?
I'm wondering if you have an emergency Informacast system, and did you use it for internal emergency communication?
So we have a text alert system that we used, and that was used a couple of times throughout the state. I think the state sent one, and then DOR, we sent one internally. That was enough to get people aware who maybe weren't watching the news that there was something going on. And then we sort of relied on word of mouth after that to make sure that, like, the primary way that we were communicating was really through managers and then having them kind of look at who, find out who was down of their staff, and then make sure that they knew that they could go and get some help. And I forget the name of the text software, but
I know it's Rave, but I don't know if that's the name of the actual software or if that's what we call it. I'm not sure.
Then over here?
Yes, so the CloudStrike patch impacted everything in the cloud, right? Applications in the cloud. How long have you had most of your applications in the cloud?
I could take that.
The majority of our applications aren't actually in the cloud. We're mostly in our state-owned data center, which is really a private cloud. The workstate, any of our servers that were there and running, which of course servers generally run 24/7, were impacted by this. A number of other state agencies were not, because they actually don't utilize the CrowdStrike product. And I think that's one of the things we didn't really talk about here today, but there's a big piece of luck that came into a lot of this, and that is just where we're located on the globe when some of this happened. Most of our staff were sleeping when this hit. So if their computers were off, they weren't as impacted. Unfortunately, the folks on the other side of the planet, it was the middle of their workday, and stuff just started going blue right in the middle while they're working. So there's a bit that we didn't really mention that earlier, but that's a thing.
Absolutely. Anybody else?
Thank you for your comments. Very, very interesting. I was wondering if you can elaborate a little bit more in the external communications. This incident was very well known, so that part was easy because everybody was alert of that problem. But if it was just the agency being with that trouble, the external communication would be more difficult to handle. If you can share your thoughts about that, it would be great. Thank you.
Sure. So the external communication strategy, it sounded like you all, of course, you had your comms folks that worked on getting it on LinkedIn, and you had those different kind of creative ways you were doing it. Your website was up back halfway through the day, I think.
Yeah, our website was up before we had enough call center agents online to be able to start taking calls. So as soon as it was up, we did put our normal rotator up that I think our taxpayers are used to seeing right on the homepage to say, our phones are down, try again later, basically, is what it says. And so that was up right away. And then as soon as our phone system was online-ish, but not really staffed enough to take calls, we also put our emergency message up there, which just tells people when they call to say we're experiencing technical difficulties, call back again later. And like I said, our taxpayers were very understanding. I think the majority of them had seen the news.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you all for your questions, and a big round of applause, and thanks again to Brad, Amanda, and Rick.